Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile.
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosro Shahi.
Shaheed Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr. He was born in Kadhimiya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmud Shahrudi was.
When we look at the works of late Rawzati, we see.
There is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamarani that he says in Farsi, Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. This is The Teacher, an analysis on the thoughts and works of the most outstanding Muslim Shiite scholars, dignitaries, and ulama all across the world of Islam. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio for today's discussion to talk about Sayyid Muhammad Said Habubi, one of the outstanding Iraqi fuqaha, are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Mahdavi and Dr. Fakhruhani. Sheikh Mahdavi, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Dr. Fakhruhani, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
So Sayyid Muhammad Said al-Habubi, mainly known as Habubi Kabir, or the Great Habubi, is one of the most outstanding fuqaha, we can say, and considered among the most outstanding leaders of jihad of Iraq against Britain and British powers when they were present in Iraq. Dr. Fakhruhani, give us some details about Sayyid Muhammad Said Habubi's early life and, in fact, the Habubi dynasty in Iraq.
Yes, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa binasta'in. First of all, it must be indicated that the late Sheikh Sayyid Muhammad Said al-Habubi was born in the year 1266 according to lunar calendar, Islamic lunar calendar in Najaf. And as he was a Sayyid, his lineage goes back to Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam. And at the same time, because most of his family members were merchants, in the beginning he went to practice, buying and selling goods, and he made a merchant in Hejaz, and then later on he returned back to Najaf and made an outstanding scholar.
That's right.
Meanwhile, because at that time, because of the connections between the whole Shia world was so strong, and Najaf after the Safavid era and almost contemporaneous with the coming of age of the Qajar dynasty, we find that Najaf became a prominent Shia center for higher education religious education. At that time, we find that a large number of Persian scholars and also Indian scholars were present in Najaf.
Yes.
At that time, the late Sayyid Jamaluddin Asadabadi was over there. He had some connections with both Najaf and Samarra. With Samarra because of the influence of the late Mirza Shirazi.
That's right.
But the main seat of Sayyid Jamaluddin Asadabadi was Najaf. And
that's
at
right.
That time, Sayyid Muhammad Said al-Habubi was very much influenced by the thoughts, by the innovative thoughts of Sayyid Jamaluddin Asadabadi. And what's important in this regard is that, he made a good and clear distinction between the British rule and supremacy, political supremacy of the Britain in Iraq, of Britain in Iraq, in contrast to learning the English language or learning foreign languages. Sometimes we find that those people who may not like to have any connection with the Islamic education, they may not have any inclination to learn the Arabic language.
That's
likewise,
right.
Those people who feel that they have to be they have to oppose a Western style, or Western lifestyle, or Western education, Western intellectual training, shouldn't show the least inclination
toward
learning the English language or other European languages. In contrast to this, misconception, the late Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Said al-Habubi encouraged people, especially young talabes, clerics in Najaf, to learn foreign languages in order to be able to make the most of the findings and the good points may be available in English texts. In contrast to knowing what may be the conspiracies of the enemies. And this is really a very outstanding point in his life and times.
And even brilliantly, he issued a fatwa on building the schools, you know, for learning the foreign languages, as you said. But at the same time, we find Sayyid al-Habbubi, Sheikh Mahdavi, among the leaders and among, we can say, the pioneers of jihad against the Britishers in Iraq. Give us the details of the British attacks in Iraq and how Sayyid al-Habbubi opposed them.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I think to create a good picture for our audience, it's good to mention the date of the time that he was living in, according to Gregorian calendar, that it was between 1849 to 1915. Mm-hmm. So 1915 at the beginning of the 20th century, right. That we have the First World War finishing, and during that breakout, we see the British invading forces have occupied the south of Iraq.
That's right.
Mainly in Basra. So among all of the ulama, we see that the name of Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Said Habbubi is shining as a leader who managed to mobilize more than 90,000 youth to go and defend their territory against British power. So it was not easy, as easy as we are talking like now, to go against the colonial powers. At that time, most of the Muslim territories and lands were under their control, and barely you would find anyone, specifically among the actually students of the Hausa, to go against them. So we see the name of Sayyid Muhammad Said al-Habbubi as the leader who managed to mobilize a good number of the youth to go and defend Iraq. And that's why we see, as a symbol of resistance, his sculpture has been erected and in that place in Nasiriyah.
Yes.
So as our teacher just right
yeah, there
now,
is a big stone sculpture of Sayyid al-Habbubi in Nasiriyah.
Yes, that is a symbol of resistance.
Hero of resistance for Iraqi people. That's right.
So we have to mention this point that besides having all these shining background, after his name, usually we have faqih, sha'ir, arif, meaning that he was a jurist. As they have comparing his life of teaching usul with Akhund Khorasani, the great usuli of our contemporary time. Why? Yes. Because he benefited from Mirza Habibullah Rashti, the great student of Sheikh Ansari.
That's right.
So in regard of Irfan, he benefited from Mirza Hussain Quli Hamedani. Usually for our audiences, this is very important. When we want to locate the position of the alim, we have to look at his masters and his students. Then we can locate his position, where he stands. So when we look at his teacher, we see the name of Mirza Hussain Quli Hamedani as a great arif, as one of his teachers, and then Mirza Habibullah Rashti, one of the great students of Sheikh Ansari. And then when we look at his students, we see the name of Ayatollah Marashi Najafi, Sayyid Muhsin Hakim, and the other ulama is shining. So, I mean, the land of Iraq has got this honor to nurture such great ulama, among which we can name the name of Sayyid Muhammad Said.
But Dr. Farhan, thank you, Sheikh Mahdavi. But what was his main concern to oppose the Britishers on that time? I mean, especially in Iraq. Was it a religious concern, a socio-political concern, or what?
In this regard, it must be indicated that the nature of, British domination everywhere is colonialistic, okay? You can rarely find any place where foreign powers, superpowers, would enter in order to make some, make some progresses or bring some progresses for those nations.
Yes.
In our time, we know that, for example, in 2003, when Western powers, mainly the Britishers and Americans, invaded Iraq, we find that the Britishers, were mainly, settled in southern Iraq because of the, oil resources over there.
Yes.
And personally, I mean, when I traveled to Iraq, I mean, and I was moving around, I mean, Basra, I noticed that the oil of Iraq was being usurped by the British. Yes. Okay. So you find that...
So under the pretext of finding nukes or nuclear powers, they got over there... You know, they arrested Saddam, isn't it?
They ruined the whole country. Yes.
Okay, chemical bombs, they say, that's right.
And at the same time, we find that at that time, when Britishers went to Iraq, I mean, invaded Iraq, it was contemporaneous with the downfall of the Ottoman Empire. Okay, yes. When the Ottoman Empire shattered, okay, you find that the Britishers and the French... I mean, powers, mm-hmm. Invaded Muslim lands. Okay, for example, Syria and Lebanon were occupied by the French, and Iraq, Jordan, and other places were occupied by the Britishers. But at the same time, since the Britishers, they went inside Iraq and they wanted to give supremacy to those groups, those Iraqi groups or tribes who were against the Shia, because they knew well the power of the Shia dynasties and the Shia people in Iraq. Because of this, it was a great threat for the whole people in Iraq in general, and especially for the Shias. Because of this, we find that the Shia ulama of Iraq, they issued fatwas in order to oppose the British rule and British supremacy over there.
Especially in the famous battle called Shaabiyah battle.
Yes, and it was, it found expression in the 1920 fatwa issued by the late great Ayatollah Muhammad Taqi Shirazi. And nowadays, for your information, nowadays a great conference is going to be held in Karbala in honor of the late Ayatollah Sheikh Muhammad Taqi Shirazi and his 1920 revolution against the British rule and British supremacy over
there. And this Muhammad Taqi Shirazi is different from Mirza Hassan Shirazi, isn't it? That's right. Okay.
Yes. And here we find that when the Britishers, invaded Iraq, what's important in this regard is that you find in the first row or in the first front row of those people who opposed the British rule, those Shia ulama who were later on renowned as Arif or mystics, and for example, contrary to other mystical traditions in other religions such as Buddhism and Hinduism, in which, those people who claim to be mystics don't have anything to do with politics or current affairs of their own, communities. In the Shia world, you find that those people who oppose, enemy powers are great mystics. And this shows a big difference between Islamic mysticism in contrast to non-Islamic mysticism.
Especially in the Shia sense, a man of action like Sayyid al-Habubi is in the field, you know, as it's mobilizing maybe more than 90,000, as I said, youth. Okay, any final remarks?
Let me make a slight contribution. When you go to European countries, you find that there are many monasteries and nunneries over there. Okay, some Christian people, who are really devoted to Christianity, choose to make mystics, or for example, men of mysticism and so on. Okay,
yes.
They never live in cities or villages. Okay, they go to very remote places. Okay?
Yes.
However, in contrast to them, in the Shia world, you find that great mystics, are with common people in the streets. Okay,
yes.
And this is a great difference between the meaning of mysticism in the Islamic world, and particularly in the Shia world, in contrast to in non-Shia world, okay?
That's right.
Even, I guess, in other, branches of the Islamic religion, however minor they might be, we find that this is a great difference between the Shia denomination in contrast to other denominations.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Dr. Farhwani. Really nice elaboration from your side regarding why Sayyid al-Habubi opposed the British powers in Iraq. And also Sheikh Mahdavi, nice elaboration by you, brother, on his life. Thank you. This outstanding man, Sayyid al-Habubi, passed away on 1333, according to the lunar Hijri calendar, in Nasiriyah. His body was taken into the holy city of Najaf, and he was buried in one of the courtyards in vicinity of the tomb of Imam al-Hussein, alayhi salam. And the Ottoman Empire also sent a message of condolence for his, we can say, and thankfulness for his efforts regarding the mobilization of the Iraqi forces against the British colonial power in Iraq, Sayyid al-Habbubi. May Allah bless the soul of this outstanding man, and may Allah protect the lives of those outstanding Islamic mystics and scholars who try to do the best for the integrity of the Islamic world, inshallah. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program, The Teacher. For more information on this program and to download for free our previous episodes, visit our website at parstoday.com/en Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.